And we're live. We're live in 1, 2, 3.
All right, we'll try that one later. Can I call you on Skype?
Yeah, we gotta start writing Sunday.
I do not.
I'm enjoying this meal. Let's just
figure out what we're doing here.
This is not a good place to ride bikes right now.
All
right,
so the last time we did this, although it was pretty inadequate.
Now we're not at a train station.
Yeah, we're working on that. Heat up the sugar.
Yeah, go a little hotter.
The mash temperature was a pain in the butt. 6 foot tall, 4 foot wide. Is this what happens after they eat?
Can I have a sip of your beer?
We're not pros. We're not even close to pros.
And art remains.
All right, welcome to the Round Guys podcast, where we are teaching you how to go pro. How you doing, Rich?
I'm doing pretty good.
What you drinking there?
The Black IPA.
Black IPA.
Nice and hoppy.
I myself have a Kolsch here. We talked about in our last recording, changing up our format a little bit. We're going to try and prevent you guys having to listen to us blather nonsensically about us. I do talk a lot about myself, but we thought we'd try to... take a step in the other direction and talk about some other breweries, invite some other breweries, bars, and other folks in the local area that are trying to make it, trying to go pro, trying to get into this beer business, or have. And today we have one of the folks that have gotten a license, have actually made their beer. And Rich actually had mentioned this. Where did you first see Boxcar Brewery, Rich?
Where did I first see it?
Yeah.
Like at the bar?
Well, you said there's a new... Apparently, there's a new brewery in town. It's right down the street. It's called Boxcar Brewery.
I saw you guys on the website.
Okay.
Yeah, surfing the web a little bit, looking for beer stuff, and then saw Boxcar. I saw Westchester next to it, and I'm like, I gotta go find this place.
And so today in the studio with us, we have Jason, and I don't know how to pronounce your last name, Jason. Can you?
It's just Kozer.
Kozer. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. It's I have no idea where it came from. It's German. My mom, she's Irish. My dad's German.
Oh, no drinking in that family, huh?
Yeah, not at all.
I myself have a German and a Russian background with a little bit of Irish, so.
Nice. Cool. I went to a Russian Orthodox Easter one year with some friends of mine, and all we did was every time you turn around, man, there was a shot of vodka in your face. It's like, hey, we need the toast for this. We need the toast for that. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
It was beautiful.
Yeah, we had a... So, Boxcar Brewery, when did you guys start up? What's your story?
JV and came, and his wife, my cousin, came to my wedding, brewed the beer at the wedding, and I said, yeah, you know, think about opening a brewery. This was down in Tennessee at the time. And he said, oh.
You decided okay. At your wedding?
I think, well, my wife and I have been discussing it. I was toying with either a distillery or a brewery. And actually, the day before we got married, my wife came home, and she had my still, which was a 5 gallon water heater, and all of the hoses all over our house. And then she came in, she just kept on walking. And so I made the beer for our wedding, and Jamie and everybody seemed to really like it. And so I said, I'm thinking about starting a brewery. And we decided we were moving up to Westchester. And so Jimmy said, well, we'll get up there with you. And so he and I started brewing together. And all of a sudden it seemed like a serious thing that we needed to, because we kept running out of beer. That was really the biggest problem.
Sounds like a familiar problem, doesn't it, Rich?
Yeah. You know, you brew a batch and you can only brew maybe one every couple of weeks because we didn't have a very intricate setup. And so... that doesn't last very long between two households and various other friends. You're like, check this out. What do you think? And
you're out of the woodwork every little while,
yeah, they
do.
We actually we used to brew both at his house and my house, and we're at Rich's house today, which is the first time we've done anything brewing wise at Rich's house since I remember the date, November 11th. As a matter of fact, he dropped an entire 5 gallon or 6.5 gallon carboy of alt beer on the rug, unfermented, at like what 11:30 at night or something like that. It was just something. It was obscene. So I wound up packing up all of the gear because most of the gear is in my house anyway. But I wound up packing all the gear. We had 30 gallons of beer that was fermented between us. We did teach a friend a homebrew day, so we had like a whole bunch of people came, did extract batches at our house, and they're all gonna ferment here. all the yeast and everything, because it was like 18 degrees and I couldn't pitch anything. And I loaded my truck and drove back up to Doylestown. And I was sober as a judge. I hadn't drank anything for a while, but I'm like, nice. I know. Yeah, you weren't. You weren't. I knew I was going to run into a roadblock at some point. And it's going to be really hard when I've got carboy upon carboy of, like, you know, filled beer ready to ferment. And fortunately for me, where 202 and 309 hit, they had put a roadblock on 309, and I went right by it and was like, because like I said, I would have had no problem, but it would, like, the cop would have been looking at me going, yeah, right, yeah, you're telling the truth.
What's with all that beer?
Yeah. So we went through a very similar phase where we were doing 5 gallon extract batches, and you know, he'd get one batch, I'd get one batch, and we'd brew at one of our houses, and we'd drink half the keg while, you know, before we brewed, then, you know, half it while we were brewing, then you're done for 2 weeks. So it's a very familiar story to us.
It's frustrating. So you think to yourself, I need to make more. My basement's not big enough. So you start thinking about ways to alleviate that problem. And one of them is you open a brewery and spend 2 years of your life filling out paperwork and finding a place to brew and, you know, working on recipes and trying to figure out what you want to do and how you want to do this and going through everything. It's amazing the things you have to think about that you don't think about.
So what was one of the biggest surprises to you?
I think my unpreparedness for the paperwork.
Everybody says that.
It's daunting. I mean, you go in, like, every month you have to fill out your state excise and your federal excise. Well, federal is twice a month, except for September, which has three. I don't know if you have looked at the schedule. It's three dates that you have to pay.
End of the fiscal year?
It's something. I don't know. Somebody needed some extra money, and they're like, oh, we'll just get it from the brewers. And then you've got your brewers reports and all that fun stuff. And you go in there and take your inventory. You know how much you've made. And then making everything fit, all the numbers from all the places and everything, like, because some people want it in bottles, some people want it in barrels, and then you have to translate everything, and then I myself am not that focused.
You know, actually, most brewers aren't. most brewers are pretty anti-corporate. They're pretty anti-establishment, and they're just, you know, pretty easygoing that I've met, so.
So, you know, you do your numbers like 5 times, and you're like, oh, yeah, that's where I went wrong. And then it's okay. You know, you figure it out, and you know, 4 hours of your life is gone. And you move on. But that, I mean, above that, even just getting the license to start with was, you know, I, again, I'm not that focused, which means I don't read all the paperwork. So they sent me a packet. Oh, you need to do this and this and this and this. And so I think I got it all done. Every time I call them, they're like, no, you need to do this too. I'm like, oh, man. Or I thought about it a couple months ago.
You should just stop calling me.
I'm done. I'll figure it out later. But yeah, you know, and the PLCB is, they're wonderful and yet not wonderful at the same time. Everybody's very helpful in the sense that they want to give you an answer, but nobody gives you the same answer.
Yes.
I was talking to somebody, and they said, if you don't like the answer you get, just call back and talk to somebody else. Somebody else will answer the phone and ask them the same question. And whoever gives you the answer you want, just write down their name.
I've heard that, actually. And I've actually found emails.
Yes.
That's the guy, like.
I found emails online that people have gotten from PLCB folks saying, here's, you know, here's an answer to your question in regards to, you know, XYZ. And then that becomes, you know, they hold on to that email. And then when an inspector comes or someone says, what are you doing? Right here, you know, I've seen those online. We've actually talked about some of those. Where it's like, all right, there's a precedent for this. We could do it.
Somebody got away with it.
Well, it's like they've said several times, you cannot open a brewery in your house. Yet there's two gentlemen up in Plains, Pennsylvania that have done just the same thing because they told the feds it was an outbuilding. And not a garage because it was an add-on to their house, but it's you walk out of their garage and right into their kitchen. But somehow they got through, even though people say you can't do that. So I know that there's always these different loopholes.
Well, how much land are they on? as well.
What does it say?
Yeah. Oh, okay. It's small. It's smaller than this property.
Okay, because I know that you can get away with the outbuilding if you've got ags and like you're on more than 5 acres, you can get away with doing that.
Right. What they
good for them. That's all I can say.
Well, no. What actually happened is he got a he got 200 signatures from neighbors, and when he went to the zoning board, the township granted him the variance, and the Fed said, well, if Pennsylvania's, and this is one of the things that I've always found interesting. I've talked to different people. Some folks say that the PALCB won't give you a license until the feds give you a license. And other people say that the feds say they won't give you a license until the state gives you a license.
Yeah, I don't have an answer for that. Because they both said, oh no, we got to wait for the other one. Oh, you got to wait for that. Oh, whatever. You know, for the registry, you definitely need to go through the feds first for registering your brand.
Registering? You mean like your labels and your
labels? Yeah.
Right.
Because they don't actually register the label, they just register the brand itself.
Okay.
And they have a copy of your federally accepted label that they keep on file.
Yeah, that's the online thing, right?
Yeah, you can do the online thing. I finally registered for that.
Okay.
My first label, I haven't been able to get it. Battle Martin's the guy who does every label, I think. I'm not sure, because every time I sent something in, it was him that called me. Maybe it was just for Pennsylvania. And
the internet was good.
It was amazing, because you hear all these horror stories about getting your label through the TTB. And he called me up, and he said, Jason, I said, what? What's wrong? What'd I do? Just send it back. I'll fix it. And he goes, no, you didn't put your brewer's license number on there or your EIN, and you didn't sign it, and you didn't do this. And I'm like, oh, man, is this a lab? And I'm just thinking to myself, am I getting a lecture? What's going on? And I go, I'm really sorry. He goes, if I email you a thing that says I can fill this out, can you do that? can you fax it back to me? I said, yeah. And he said, but just this once, man, just this once, because I'm not filling out your whole form again. And I said, okay, cool. Maybe I got him on a good day. I don't. It's hard to say.
Okay.
You never know. I think if you just if you're friendly with people, hopefully that's enough to buy you some slack sometimes.
That's very good. So, how long were you guys homebrewing before you actually decided to start this insane journey?
I started homebrewing back in 96. Took a little hiatus from it, from moving around various places, and then went back to homebrewing around 2000. Homebrewed for a couple of years, and decided I needed to do something else with it other than just the homebrewing. I think it partially has to do with, for me personally, I wanted to do something other than what I was doing, and brewing seemed like a good choice because I really like doing it, and there's something magical about it in a lot of ways. It's just, and I know, you know, it's a lot of chemical reactions and a lot of organisms and whatever, but it's endlessly fascinating, and the amount of stuff that you learn and need to learn, it never stops, and it's quite amazing. Because I thought I knew a lot of stuff before I started brewing on a brewery scale. And I've learned twice as much as that since I started brewing on a brewery scale. It's amazing.
So what are some of the technical things or brewing things that you've learned since being on a large scale?
Well, we stepped up. When we stepped up our production, we went to a sidearm system. Which is Scotty Dierkoker, actually Victory, helped my engineer design our sidearm system, which means the beer itself, the whole volume of beer never actually boils, because there's no direct heat on the beer as far as like a steam jacket or anything like that. It all passes through a heat exchanger. And you need a certain number of cycles per hour in order to be able to be considered an effective sidearm system. And so I never heard of that. And then I also had to figure out how to use this system. We ended up doing partial decoctions. We ended up doing, different kinds of mash, trying to run the mash through without compressing our grain bed too much by recirculating. And then we had to figure out this and figure out that, and it took about 5 batches down the drain before we figured out how to even use our brewing system.
Did you piece your system together, or did you get it from?
It was.
How'd
it was.
How did you guys figure out your system?
Well, that's funny, because I wanted to, you think to yourself, okay, let's see, I'm just going to scale up what I'm doing, and you think I'm going to use a direct fire system, which I'm using right now. Simple, right? You know how to use it. You just have a bigger kettle, no problem. Big single wall stainless tanks, much cheaper than jacketed steam tanks with whirlpools and blah blah blah. They're $6,000 to $10,000 or more. And so I said to the township, I want to do a direct fire system. And the township said, you need an engineer stamp on it. Find an engineer crazy enough to do this. Now, in retrospect, I think that would have been a lot easier. I would have maybe had to find a different engineer than the one I was using. But I could have found one. And it would have probably been a lot less expensive than the $17,000 840,000 BTU boiler that I'm using right now, which is phenomenal, because actually I can do an amazing amount of things with that system. I can actually brew 2 different batches at the same time, which I'm really excited about. And as soon as I get those valves that I need to do that, I'm going to try it. So I ended up with this theoretical system, and I just had to piece what we thought was going to work. And it was also what we could afford. I wanted everything to be conical, vertical, blah, 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 because that's what you see everywhere, And my partner said, can we use horizontal tanks? I said, I don't know. And he goes, well, I can get us used dairy tanks for cheap. And I said, we can use horizontal tanks. And we just had to figure out how to make them work. And I right now, I'm so happy that was a choice. But just because the way the yeast functions, I had to find out how the yeast functioned in a horizontal tank as well, and read up all about that. And the esters that come off of our beer, because of the horizontal tank, I like a lot more. They seem more soft and supple and subdued versus the more angular and straightforward esters that were coming out of our beer when we were doing, the carboys. So it kind of makes the yeast work in a different way and changes their function, which is pretty cool.
You'll find in a large cylindrical conical, you'll get a lot more hydrostatic pressure and a lot more yeast suppression that way that you don't get as a home brewer. You don't have the volume of beer to do that. It's not going to happen. But with the horizontal tanks, what's the geometry? Are they square? Are they round? Are they just kind of parabolic bottomed, or
they're actually like a circle on its side, like a cylinder on its okay. side. But about halfway, it just started going straight up.
So kind of parabolic then.
Kind of, yeah, that would be.
And you said you have open fermentation.
We do have open fermentation.
Is that what you're fermenting, or do you?
That's what we ferment. Yeah. Yeah, and it's amazing. We're right now we're going through all of our CFE protocols and changing things that got lactobacilli in it. I never had lactobacilli. Like, I'm cleaning everything. I don't understand. But what happened was our mill. We had a batch that was fermenting, and I had the door open to the fermenter because I had some hose running in and out or something or other. And I was milling up the next batch. And I just aerosoled a bunch of lactobacilli and dropped it in my beer. And that's not something you often think about. I mean, I knew that it could happen, but I wasn't prepared for the extent that it would throw it 40 feet in another direction. It just didn't seem like a plausible idea. I'm like, what? whatever. Throw it turns into 300 gallons of beer that you have to throw out.
Is that for the beer? What was it?
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess I didn't know it was. I didn't know it was infected. Now we actually run every batch through our microbiologist for a bottle during fermentation, and then after it's bottled.
Who do you use for microbiologist? Is it a friend or is it a lab?
It's actually a guy around the corner from our brewery. When we first opened up,
it sounds fishy. He just want a case of beer and I'll test it for you.
It's actually, we're working for beer right now because that's all I got to offer him. Beer's amazing currency, really.
That's how we pay our webmaster.
There you go. You understand these things. Yeah, it's really wonderful, though. But I'm not sure. I can only be paid at some point, but right now he's just taking beer. But see, he's a molecular biologist, a microbiologist, and he actually takes the DNA. Wow, beer's happy to see you. He takes the DNA and barcodes the DNA from each strand of bacteria that we have growing in our brewery, and that way we can track where each bacteria is in our brewery at any given time.
GPS location.
Yeah, and it's like, that's why people are smart in different ways. Because I fully appreciate that and the fact that, I'm learning an awful lot, but it's not, like I said, you learn so much. But it's not something that I have to know in depth because somebody else does.
Yeah. So it was the idea to what you did, went around your brewery and swabbed everything and. Then recorded locations and what was growing there. And...
That's what we're in the middle of doing. We're changing. We're working on following it at different times and things like that to see how things are moving.
Okay.
So right now we've just got one picture, and we're just gonna rotate, do more pictures, and that way we can see how things are developing, and change like our cleaning procedures and whatnot, so that we can make sure that doesn't happen again. Or it happens very regularly. Because, with open tank, it's an amazing gamble in a lot of ways. You just trust that layer of foam on your ale is going to keep. I don't think I would do... I probably would not do a lager open tank, personally. Just because the yeast doesn't have any suppression, it doesn't have any protection. Where you've got that layer of foam on top of your beer, it pretty much kills off whatever can get into your beer that's just floating around versus just dropping something in there.
So when you said lager doesn't have any protection, you're talking about lager doesn't have any foam?
The way it propagates is it doesn't have the same kind of foam.
It doesn't croison the way
it does. It doesn't croison the same way ale does.
Okay. So I still do get croison and some foam at the top, but not as much. It's definitely a different fermentation at that level. But it was weird because the first time I did a lager, I was expecting just a lot of bubbling and stuff at the bottom, and then a placid surface area. And it wasn't like that. It was like it looked weird. It doesn't look like an ale, but it looked weird. So, and are your tanks temperature controlled, or is it all just?
They are temperature controlled.
Okay.
We do the first, one of the first, even though we should have thrown out all the first five batches, we kept a couple and fermented them just there because you want a whole cycle to go through. You want to follow it. You want to see what's going on with your beer so that you get all your processes done. And so we bottled some beer that was not quite up to snuff because we wanted to make sure that we could know how to bottle, so when we had good beer, we'd be ready. So we actually had a batch that was at 80 some degrees because we hadn't hooked it up. Because I'm like, I know we need to worry about fermentation and temperatures, but it's like 40 degrees. I'm not worried about it. And we're sitting in January or December or somewhere in that area, and I got 81 degree tank in a room that is like 20 degrees. I still don't know how crazy that must have been for that poor little yeast. so we coincidentally set up our chilling system the next day.
So from when you guys actually started the process of opening the brewery, paperwork, all that kind of stuff, to when you had your first saleable batch, how long did that take?
From when we first rented the space, you needed an address to file. First rented the space until we rented April 1st of last year. And we got our final clearance March 12th of this year.
Okay.
And that a lot of that has to do with what we thought we needed to do first before we, you know, we didn't have a great timeline.
Okay.
I could have done it in probably 4 months less. But
did you guys have all your equipment before you got your space and everything like that?
Nothing at all. Just because we really didn't, neither one of us had, well, all right, we had some equipment. I mean, obviously we were burning away. But any of the big tanks and things like that, we just didn't have any space for. I don't think our wives would let us store 600 gallon tanks.
So I know you have to provide the feds with an outline of how your brew is going to look. Do you have to give them an update if you change equipment? If you swap things out?
Anything you do. Well, no. You mean like if like we've added a fermenter. I didn't need to update them for that. Any like physical address change, or if we move, like if I move my fermentation from one room to another room, then I have to update the PLCB and the feds.
Okay.
As long as the use of the room is the same, the space is the same, and nothing else has changed, then it's okay.
So I have an email from the PLCB saying that there is no minimum size for brewing tanks. So we could technically file with our existing system, get approved, and then bring in 100-gallon tanks at a later date, and that's...
Or chained up or something like that. I guess you could do that.
But as long as your space is the same.
Right.
Because the guy who comes around and checks in this area, you know, he doesn't count your tanks. He checks your space. He checks your floor. He makes sure that the space that you're occupying is the space that you say you're occupying. You're not using anything inappropriately, whatever that means.
It's not a brothel in your fermentation room, is that?
There you go. So that seems to me like that it's. But you know, then again, I'm sure if you call the PLCB, somebody would. If you called enough times, somebody would say, no, anytime you change anything, you have to. I know anytime you change, like, any percentage of ownership of the brewery, with the PLCB, they don't care how small that percentage is. They want to know about it. With the feds, it's more than 10%.
So did you get the LCB detective to come on out and talk to you guys and talk?
Do all the questionnaires and make us fill out? Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
That was fun.
That's pretty pretty standard from what I've heard.
Oh, it is. It is. My hope was that we would have as few people to deal with as possible, as far as like, you know, investors and all that stuff, because every one of them had to fill out a form, you know, saying, especially now with all the Homeland Security stuff. They now have another page of stuff to fill out.
Yeah, that was the question when we talked to to Breaker up in Plains. They just wanted to know, where'd you get your money from? That was really all the guy was concerned about. Did you loans, personal loans, and PC stuff together? That's really what it was. So we had this stuff when we applied for the license. We haven't, you know.
It's just it just takes a long time. And even if it only took 6 months or 7 months, it would have still been a long time.
Here's a question for you. I've been thinking about this a lot too, with us trying to figure out location. Like, how long did it take you to kind of scope out where? And what was the process like? I mean, did you have to, were you thinking ahead of time, like, I need A, B, and C, you know, doors this big, that big, you know, whatever? Or were you kind of like, hey, this looks like a great place, let's see if we can actually put a brewery here?
Yes. Basically, I live out in downtown. And you know, I wanted to open a brewery out there, but everybody was like, "Well, then you'll just be the other brewery in downtown, and that might not be what you want to be." And we're like, "Okay, fine." So we kind of looked out a little bit farther, and basically, what we wanted to do was have enough space so that we could put those conical cylindrical containers.
that you're not using yet.
We're not using the steel ones. That with it.
Yeah. That's right. And have enough clearance. That was when I've been reading about, you know, people opening up breweries and stuff. They said, just make sure you have high enough ceiling.
Yes, you read the same book I did.
Apparently, and what's more crazy about it was that we started off at a place with 15-foot ceilings, but the landlord wanted us to move to another space that didn't have floors in it because we were putting floor drains, because he didn't want us to rip up his floors. I'm like, is it the same space? He goes, yeah, it's the same space. Everything's the same. I said, fine. Well, the space we were in had 15-foot ceilings, which was, in my humble estimation, the minimum I needed. And when we moved into this space, I never looked up because I didn't have any equipment yet. I'm like, oh, no problem. It's 12-foot ceilings. So if I had those big vertical tanks, I would have no way to use them.
See, I don't look up because I'm only 5'8". That's why I don't look up. I never have to hit anything with my head.
So look up. That's, I guess, is my advice when looking for space, is looking up and making sure that what you think you need, you have. Because it's there's this really long checklist, and things get lost in the shuffle. A lot of things get lost in the shuffle. You know, and one day when some government agency asks you for something, you're like, yeah, that was on my list to do like 4 months ago. Sorry about that. Hold on. And then you scramble for like 2 weeks trying to get it. But especially, and the PLCB is famous for this. I love this, where you have to, if it's not ready when they need it, they close the case, and you have to write them to reopen the investigation, which basically means, I took too long, and you guys didn't want to wait.
You're a cold case at that point.
Cold case, yeah. You know, and so
does the hot blonde come out and talk to you?
No, unfortunately. But yeah, it's weird, you know, to have them go, oh, well, you have to reopen your case. I'm like, what? You just told me, like, last week, man. How much time? I mean, I didn't know it was a test. So we've had to, almost every form, maybe only four or five different forms we had with the PLCB, we had to reopen the investigation. And that's okay. I'm all right with that. I'm not in a race.
I remember you were saying when we talked last time, you said that West Goshen didn't allow you guys to put floor drains in, right?
Yeah, you have to check. Yeah, we had to get a special variance per se.
Like zoning and stuff. I mean, anything special with that? Like,
zoning, as long as we fit in with the, I don't even know what zoning it was. We had a real estate agent who did commercial property and said, this is what you need. And when I went to the township, I said, this is what I'm going to do. Can I do that with this space? They said, yes. Yeah. You can only do 10% retail out of your space. The rest of it's got to be wholesale or restaurants, whatever.
That's what I heard about. Commercial industrial doesn't matter so much as like if you want to put something, if you were going to put a package brewery on, you know, High Street, the township might say no because we really don't want that. But if it was, you know, 5 miles outside, you know, wherever it's driving, they're like, yeah, sure, that's not a problem. They don't really, it's more about appearance and, you know, kind of, we don't want stinky grain in the back and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that was funny because Goshen was, when I talked to West Goshen the first time, they said, now, what's the smell going to be like? Is that going to bother the neighbors? I'm like, I sure hope I don't offend my neighbors.
So they should interview my neighbors. You ever be cooking?
I don't like oatmeal.
ever have like your neighbor cooking a steak and your dog walks outside and just sticks his nose in the air and goes, that's what my neighbors do when I'm brewing. You'll literally see, like, the wind will blow, like, down the hill, and you'll see, like, my neighbor will be raking, and he'll be like, he'll turn around and he'll look, and he'll look, Scott's brewing! So, but at the same time, when we first started doing it, everybody hated the smell. My girls can't stand the smell, but now it's kind of like a chicken soup for the sober man's soul, so to speak. They come like wafting over, going, "That's very nice." But did you guys have any problems with, like, you know, yeast disposal and sewer and other environmental concerns? Or
we actually take all of our grain goes to this farmer's taking pretty much all of our waste.
Okay.
We've got a farmer that we hook up, and definitely know farmers. That's what it's all about.
I live in farming country, so.
There you go. Yeah, so we actually put the hops and the yeast, because the cows will eat the hops and yeast, but the pigs won't. I had a pig that once ate a 5-gallon bucket of flour without drinking any water. So I thought pigs ate everything. Yeah.
Unfortunately, yeast will hurt a pig's digestion because they're very similar to our stomach. So, if you've ever seen Rich eat, you'll understand why.
So the cows can deal with it.
So your farmer has pigs?
So the farmer has pigs.
Does he dispose of bodies?
I don't know.
Okay.
I can ask him.
All right, just, you know, he's, future
he's,
reference.
He's right down the road.
Okay, future reference.
Catch yeah. cover. So we you know, because the water guy was basically, he was more concerned with particulates. He said, I can't have any particulates larger than 1/4 inch. I said, okay. I got no problems with that, because after I mill up something, there's nothing 1/4 inch going down that drain. But at the same time, it was like I personally didn't want all of my grain and all of my yeast and all my hops and everything to go down the drain. It seems like an awful lot of waste. Being as all I'm doing is extracting sugar, there's a whole bunch of other stuff that can be used for something, anything.
Yeah.
So we try and make sure that it all gets used.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's very good. So I've seen you guys have done, obviously you met two of our friends, Dominic and John.
Keep their hands clean.
They're also starting up a brewery as well.
They actually stopped by. He ran into my brother Jamie over at Keystone Brewing.
Okay. Yeah, John actually works there.
Yeah.
At Keystone.
And so he's like, we'll stop by. And they just asked me a ton of questions. And I love that. I mean, it's funny. I've only been in business, we've only been able to sell 3.5 months, not even 4 months now. And I think we've had 4 or 5 people who are thinking about starting up breweries stop by. Not like individuals, but I mean like 4 or 5 different breweries.
That's actually what got us going on this path is when we had always, you know, we talked about opening a brewery, and every home brewer wants to open up a brewery. And when we really started getting serious and we actually started running into a lot of people that were in the process, and we were like, all right, let's at least help each other out. People ask me, why are you trying to help the competition? I'm like, it's not really competition. There's enough beer that can be sold in this area that, you know,
wouldn't it be wonderful if in the Philadelphia area, no Budweiser, Coors, or Busch, or any large brands actually even needed to sell, because there were so many people making lots of really good, affordable microbrews. Like, that would be, man, how cool would that be?
Well, and that's... Well,
I'm not dissing large breweries.
No, and I'm also not dissing the West Coast. I mean, they make good beers, but if we can get, you know, a lot more local breweries, we're actually going to be talking to Boakes on Saturday. I just picked up a 4-pack of the Russian Imperial Stout. I got 4 bottles of Russian Imperial Stout for $12. Where can you get a Russian Imperial Stout from, a West Coast or a Colorado brewery or something like that for $4 for a 12, you know, four bucks a bottle? They're going to charge you 6, 8, you know, 12. So, I mean, you get good local beer. It's nice to
But you just make this whole region into a great beer scene, too. Put a lot of beer culture.
Well, we got Philly Beer Week, but we were very underrepresented with Philly Beer Week. It was not a lot of.
Yeah, the local scene is not as impressive in that as it should be.
The bars are. I mean, the bars and the. I mean, I ran into the owner of Blue Dog. I was up at Blue Dog. I was looking around their bottle shop. You looking for something? Like, you got a case of Boxcar over there sitting with your stuff, but you don't have any Boxcar in the bottle shop. What's that all about? She's like, oh, I'm sure we could sell you something. Like, just point being, local brewery, you know, why don't you have their stuff out here? And the owner Chris was right there, and I started talking to him, and he's like, yeah, we saw him on the web, brought out their, you know, called him up, asked him for their beer. He's like, it's a little far for them, but he said the beer sold really quickly. He was like, it was a really big hit. Everybody really liked it. And that's a really good beer bar up there. That's one of the go-to places that I would go to for what's hot, what's new, and what's going on up there. So it was neat to see you guys up there already.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, only having it just be the two of us, a lot, I mean, not all of it, but a lot of it it's amazing how many people just call. Like, how many bar owners around here are like, hey, heard about you guys, want to know what's up with that, can you deliver to so-and-so? And sometimes it's way out in the middle of nowhere, you know, in Bucks County. And you're like, I mean, not that that's really necessarily, but it's if you're driving a case out there, or two cases out there, that's a really far drive for that small of an order.
This guy on your payroll for a couple of days.
I'll have to get a distributor license for Chester County beers. I'll be Chester County Beers and Bucks.
So it's interesting trying to figure out, you know, what you're going to do, and right now we're at the point where we're like, okay, are we going to go with the distributor, or are we going to keep self-distributing? Not that we're like getting that big, but it's like there's a lot of people out there that I'd really like to have my beer, but I don't necessarily want to drive there as an individual.
Can you make enough to support like an Origlio or a Gretz or something like that?
We're talking to a couple of different smaller distributors.
Okay.
I mean, you know, there are larger distributors that we're still going to talk to as well, just actually to get a bigger picture so that we can see what the difference is between the distributors. So we're doing a lot of homework in that sense. But, you know, when you first start out, you're like, I can do that. I can distribute, no problem. You know, and you think to yourself, I only need so many placements, and they'll go through that much beer and blah, blah, blah. And you figure all that out, and then when you get making beer and start selling it, and you realize, well, you need four times as many placements because they're only taking a quarter of the amount of beer that you thought they were going to take because what they're really taking is what's normal.
So what was your assumptions in terms of what each account would take?
I was assuming that a bar would go through, well, like we're in a station tavern. We're on rotation there. They go through a half barrel in pretty much a weekend. So we assumed that an average bar would go through two or three barrels of beer a month if we were on all the time. Like Station Taproom, they rotate everything. So they only order from us once every month, month and a half. That's great because then at least we're in the rotation. But I assumed that other bars that kept us on all the time would go through that at that same pace, if not more. But they don't. And that's mostly because people don't know who we are. And so we haven't built up enough of a name in order to be able, for that to be able to happen. So it's all about how much patience do you have.
Okay.
You know, I mean, if I wanted to wait it out for another 2 years and slowly build up the name, then yes, each account that we have would go through two, three barrels a month, no problem. But I'm not necessarily that patient at this particular moment.
When you're talking about barrels, you're talking about actual physical barrels or half kegs?
Oh, no, actual physical barrels, 31 gallon.
Okay. Barrels. All right, so I feel a little bit better, Rich, because our estimates were much more conservative than that. our estimates were probably 9 half kegs a month between 10 accounts is what we kind of...
That's very realistic.
Okay.
That's very realistic. Okay. But, you know, not having, I mean, only... working in bars and restaurants from a perspective of where I was, you know, I knew how much beer we were going through and I knew what those beers were, but those were bigger brands.
So do you think, and you guys have one beer right now, right?
We do actually. I'm doing a brown.
Okay.
Nothing that dark.
Nothing that dark.
That's it. That is black.
Is it the black IPA, Rich?
That is.
Quarter. Okay.
Yeah. And so we're working on a brown for the fall.
Okay.
But you need to start now, because we need to make sure that we have it down for sure before we start doing that larger.
So how many recipes did you have? Like, these are the recipes I want to go in with, and this is what we want to make when you first open your doors.
We've always been, we want to do a flagship beer.
Okay.
And we've had our beer. It's transitional ale. And basically what we wanted to do was create a flagship beer that would catch on more than anything else. And then if we had another beer, great, we have another beer.
Okay.
That's always been our plan. And now we're seeing more in the idea of we're probably gonna need three beers. That's my goal, is to have three beers that we feel really solid about. And just keep those on all the time. If we do any seasonals, great.
Yeah, I think we're taking a slightly different approach in that keep the thirsty craft beer public engaged. I think certain bars like a Blue Dog, like a Capone's, like a Station House, we just need to give them different flavors as often as we can.
There's something for sure to be said about that.
We were kind of taking the approach from the Stone Rogue philosophy, where they don't really have a flagship beer; they just have beers they make. But then again, we could go with that plan, and everybody really likes this beer, and we sell the shit out of our Kolsch, and that's what everybody likes, and that's what we wind up making most of the time because that's what people want. Yeah, so we actually thought about a flagship beer, but we thought about a flagship beer because Rich is extracting the Lancaster Kolsch out of the freezer before it exploded when he woke up the next morning. So everybody knows what people laugh about. So yeah, I'd listened to I think it was something on the Sunday session where they had a guy out in San Francisco who was got permission to brew out of his house, Lavery Brewery, who had an alternating proprietorship out in Erie, Pennsylvania, and this guy up White Birch, and the guy who was brewing on a 15-gallon system in his house was just in development. Lavery had two beers, flagship beer, and then another one. And the guy up at White Birch he had no temperature control. He had nothing. So he brewed basically whatever the season wanted to. So he would do Saisons in the summer. He'd do, a lot of Belgians. When it got warmer, that was his. And he found it, his public really liked just that. They're asking, what's new? He would brew stuff. Someone got a hold of 50 gallons of maple syrup and some, fresh spruce. So he's like, all right, I'll make a beer out of that. And that's what, that's what his customers like. So it seems like there's like John and Dominic who you spoke with, they're in a completely different direction where we are. They're all 5% alcohols and 5% alcohol beers and stuff that you have, five or six pints of. We're all in the, six and plus, and something again that, at a place like Blue Dog it might play very well, but at a place like Joe's Tavern down the street, they're not going to be serving 12 of those to one guy because they'll fall off the bar stool, that kind of. So I think there's room for a lot of different beer philosophies out there.
Oh, for sure, and that's what's so wonderful about it. I mean, there's a myriad of different ways you can go, and none of it's wrong. It's just how well you can adapt, and that's one of the good things about being small as a brewery. No matter how small you are, if it's just like you guys, or my partner and Jamie and I, there's just two of us. Something needs to happen. It can happen like that. You don't have to go through I'm working on this beer right now.
Strategic collaboration going on.
Yeah, I'm working on a beer right now, and I like this, but I don't know how it's going to turn out. Did I have to fill out any orders or tell anybody to do anything different? No, I just said that's what I'm doing. And
you guys don't have staff meetings?
No. We should get together once in a while and talk. But we're always just running around doing this and that, because there's never an end.
So are you the main brewer? Are you the one that does most stuff? Is Jamie brew as well?
No, I do the brewing per se.
Okay.
Jamie does help, and he's also you need perspective. For sure. Like when you're developing recipes and things like that, you need somebody who's going to tell you what they think. And if somebody's going to go into business with you, they're going to tell you what they honestly think, because they're not going to be able to go out there with a straight face if they don't like it. so that's always refreshing to know that whatever somebody's going to tell you is going to be honest. And that's good. You need that.
Rich and I actually wound up splitting things about 50-50. I would say about half the beers that have won awards or anything like that, he's brewed, with me basically being the assistant brewer or the carboy cleaner. and then the other half have been beers that, he couldn't come up and I just brewed on my own. So we've got a good mix of knowing the process. But typically what happens in a brew day is he's the one with taking all the measurements, and I'm, the guy moving shit. That's really what it is. I'm the guy moving shit and bring it. I do the fermentation.
He does all the magic afterwards.
I do all the fermentation, all the bottling, all the kegging, all the, we got stuff fermentations. What do you do? All that kind of nonsense.
Yeah, because you've got high gravity beers.
Right.
So you definitely need to worry about that.
Yes.
We don't.
Yes.
Well, at this point in time, we don't have any high gravity beers.
Yeah. Well, what do you consider high gravity?
If you're looking at over 7% in some of your alcohols, that's when you start getting into the higher gravity end of life, where you might run into some stuff.
So I consider high gravity specific gravity of 90 or higher. So.
Okay.
I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. I'm saying that because I've gotten so used to what I need to do to ferment out, you know.
I'm tired of hearing him saying like, "This is going to blow the top off the fermenter." Like,
and it has. I've come home. We have a conical.
So what?
We had a conical with 5 gallons of headspace. I came home and I had put a sweatshirt over it just to keep the 15 gallon conical warm. And I came home and the sweatshirt was standing like the rim of the sweatshirt was at the bottom of the conical. The lid was all the way up with foam. It had risen up like literally had to be about that high above the rim, and it was supporting the sweatshirt. I'm just glad I got home before my wife did. That's all I have to say. Because if she saw that in her laundry room, I would have been dead. That's why I said to him, I said, we have to take 2 gallons out of this Saison because it's going to be fermenting really hot. And he's like, who cares? It's going to ferment in your garage. I'm like, yeah, my wife has to walk by the fermenter. And if it's...
you
can't have that. Nope. So, no, but actually, not to joke around, we did stumble upon a mild recipe that actually I think we both really liked, which was extremely low gravity. It was only starting gravity of like 40 or 16 Plato, whatever that is. No, 10 Plato.
10 Plato.
10 Plato.
16 Plato. 16 Plato is really low.
Yeah, 16 Plato is really low. Yeah, that's actually what our Kolsch is about 16 Plato is, what the starting gravity is for that one. So. Anything you do marketing-wise or how you get your name out there? I mean, I see a lot of tastings. I've seen some events at the brewery. Anything else you guys are doing?
That would be pretty good, too. That's good.
But I have to give credit, and I'm sure they stole it from somebody else, but I have to give credit to Lagunitas Brewing Company. That's where when I first moved out to California, I was living out there for a couple years. I knew one of their brewers, and he was like, "Oh yeah, you got to come up during one of our bottling days." I'm like, "Bottling days?" He goes, "Yeah, you just come by, you hang out for a couple hours, help us bottle, and we'll send you home with some beer." I'm like, "Awesome! I need to do that." that stuck with me, you know. And I love that idea. I think it really gives people a vested interest in what you're doing, you know. And we sit around. We drink some beer, we feed them some pizza, and we almost never have the same crew. We have a lot of people who show up on a fairly regular basis. I don't know where all this beer goes that they're taking home, but it's all right. A lot of people are like, I was at this party the other week, and I gave out a ton of beer to people, and it's great, you know, because I think it's one way to get people to start thinking about your brewery is to interact with them. You know, and a lot of almost every beer distributor will let you do a tasting, unless they're booked. Like, you just call them up and go, "Hey, I want you guys to carry my beer. You know, if I do a tasting, will you guys, you know, at least carry it while I'm there?" You know, and they'll pretty much do that. And it's a really good way to get in the door, and it's also a really good way to get people out there talking about your brewery. Because my wife overheard a conversation about these people who were talking about our brewery. They didn't know that she wasn't part of the conversation. She was just there in the area. And this person said, "Oh, yeah, I heard it was started by 2 young kids. They don't know what they're doing, blah, blah, blah." I'm like, "Well, there's stories, you know, you don't know. And people don't know who you are or what you're doing or where you're from, unless you're out there talking to them." And so those 2 people, whoever they were, I hope at least they showed up at one of our tastings or something, and they know better now. I think I know I'm doing anything differently.
I heard a great term for the kind of marketing that folks like us have to do called nano-marketing. Just, you know, a little bit at a time, just little small things, just little, you know, tasting. I know my neighbor... if there is a tasting going on at a bar at a distributor, he will almost 9 times out of 10 buy that beer. Like, he'll just say, oh, yeah, this is really good. Talks to the brewers, really likes them. They're great people. He buys a case of beer. Walks out. He might not buy that case of beer again, or, you know, he might buy whatever's on sale, but when he sees someone there, so it hopefully does turn into real sales when you do those things.
Yeah, and also those people, I mean, chances are those people are going to share that beer or that experience with somebody else. And that's the best you can hope for, is that they've held at least one or two other people, so that you know, 20 or 30 people that you talk to that day means that you really talk to, you know, 60 or 80 people.
So what are your plans for the future? You've got, you know, one beer that you have out. You're trying to good transition beer, planning a brown ale. You guys have, you know, any ideas about size, where you want to go, what you want to push yourselves to, dreams, aspirations, conquer the world?
Yeah, that's what we do every night.
Pinky, what are we going to do tonight? What do we do every night? Take over the world.
My philosophy is Pennsylvania. There's enough people who drink beer in Pennsylvania that I really have no aspirations of going anywhere else. I didn't put on our bottles, there's no Maryland return deposit, blah blah blah, California redemption value. There's none of that stuff. I don't care. If I was making so much beer that I needed to go and deliver my beer out to California, more power to me. But that's not what I really want. I really want to stay local. I want to eventually get all of my malt locally and all my hops locally. But that's not anything that's really readily available. And that's something that I think if there's more people brewing and there's more things going on here in the brewing industry, I really think that we can start creating a more self, sustained system as far as being able to make some really cool beers and being able to have them all be from here. And that, I think that'll change the terroir of the beers that we make. For sure.
Well, at least I know they're starting up hop farms in Wisconsin and Michigan. At least we can keep it on this side of the Mississippi to start with. And Brees is in Wisconsin, so at least hops grow rather well around here. Hopefully, you know, folks will start growing them, because there's definitely an opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, I right now I'm getting for my little baby beer that we're doing right now. I've got. 5 different countries, five or 6 different countries that I'm getting ingredients from. That's nuts. it's beer. You know, why do I have to get, you know, malt from Canada and Scotland and Belgium? Why can't I just get it from around the corner? Almost all the stuff's grown here. And then shipped out,
yeah.
And then malted and shipped back here. Like,
that's where Canada's not really another country to me, because where I grew up, like, it was the first time my wife and my brother-in-law went with me to Buffalo. We're driving along the Niagara River in Buffalo, and my brother-in-law looks and he says, "I can't believe that's another country over there." I'm like, to me, that's like driving down 95 and Jersey's on the other side. Like, it's literally, like, growing up, it wasn't really another country. It was a place I could drink at 19. But,
that's exactly what it was.
Better,
yeah.
Appreciation for the arts in Canada, the Canadian ballet.
Yeah. Yeah, well.
And you can leave your doors unlocked.
Yeah. But no, I do agree that, where do you get most of your malt from? You get buying it from a distributor?
I'm buying it from a wholesaler. It's a North Country malt. They're
okay.
Great Western, I think, is what they're really called. And they're, you know, I mean, and then you can't get hops in this country unless you're going through, like, Hop Union somehow, one way or another, either a sub distributor or them.
So you're getting your hops from New Zealand, or?
No.
Oh, you're getting from Hop Union?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I mean, at least it's they're. Most of my hops are American. but the New Zealand hops, I really haven't gotten into the New Zealand hops quite yet.
We use mostly noble hops, and then American hops is really what we.
Yeah.
A lot of Saz, a lot of Perlay. Just because we're brewing mostly German styles is really what we brew. So it's kind of hard to throw some Cascade or Centennial in a in a Northern German alt beer.
Not traditional.
Yeah, not traditional. There's another question I was going to ask you. You have any questions to ask while I try to wait for the thought to go back around the merry-go-round so I get back to my.
On the spot.
Put you on the spot.
I actually want to. I don't think I. We. What size is your system?
We're doing 10 barrels, batches. I could probably push it to 12 if I ever had to. But, man, our mash tank, the other day I looked in while we were doing the sparge. And it was really hot. it was a little up there. I'm like, yeah, I don't really think I can fit too much more. So I'm thinking it might be able to squeak out like another, you know, 2 barrels if I for some reason had to do that. But I wouldn't. I think 10 barrels is a respectable system. You know, we figured it out that mathematically that was a good thing for us. You know, like just like how many bars we needed, whatever. you know, so yeah, it's a 10 barrel system, and I think a little smaller system, 7 barrel, wouldn't be that bad.
And how often do you have to brew with that?
With it's a 10 barrel.
Keep up your demand.
Right now, twice a month. We're only doing 20 barrels a month, we're hoping to we need to do 5. To make everything that we wanted to happen.
Right.
Which isn't bad. It's not a large number, but so 50 barrels of beer is a lot more beer than I ever thought about making. but at the same time, if you think about it, it's not a lot of beer. It's 14 cases. No more than that. Well, anyways.
5 cases.
And how many cases in a barrel?
You get 2 cases and 5 gallons. So 15,
2 and some change.
Two and some change. So you're talking in a barrel, you're going to get 14 cases?
Yeah, 14-ish. I mean, it's really only about a couple hundred cases a month. And that's not bad. But it's just being able to get them out there and get them into people's hands that want to drink and want to try them. And that's the hardest part. I think the brewing part is really not that hard. I mean, it is. It's a lot. I mean, I'm not saying it's not a lot of work. You actually spend more time cleaning than you do anything else.
I know that firsthand. I know that.
Yeah. You cleaning a 5 gallon or even a 15 gallon system, little problem. I thought it was bad before. And now it's like, you know, you think about things you didn't think about before, and your CIP takes a lot longer, and you've got so many other things, and you need to make sure everything's clean, and blah, blah, blah. And so it's just all day. You're just cleaning.
I'll have to show you the video when Gene Brolet made me crawl into the boil kettle at Iron Hill to clean it, and I got stuck on the way out. He's sitting there, that son of a bitch wouldn't help me. He's sitting there with a video camera videoing me. The reason I wasn't there is because he couldn't get his shoulders through. But Gene's the same size as you, and he's like,
well, why was Gene having you do it?
Because I was the helper that day. So he's like,
he was on the last ordering us around that day.
Yeah, he's like, you got to get there. See, he literally goes, someone's got to get and clean that kettle. And Rich and I both looked at him and went, and then we just kind of like just sat there, and he waited about 15 seconds. He's like, no, guys, I'm serious. Someone has to go in that kettle. I was like, all right, I'll do it. I'll do it. Do you have a plasma cutter to get me out if you need to? So we were joking around the whole time. We were brewing with him because on Gordon Biersch's labels or cases or whatever, it says, never trust a skinny brewer. So we said that a couple times, and so as I was stuck, Gene's like, never trust a skinny brewer, huh? I'm like, if I could catch you, I'd kill you. But it was very nice of them to let us come and play with the big equipment and all that kind of stuff. It was
it's really cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, anytime you go, we can come by.
Well, actually, I was thinking about that. We can come down and do a you know, maybe next time you guys have an event or do a bottling day, we can come down and do a remote. Maybe provide a little music. I've got a full DJ set up, and and kind of talk to people, see what's going on, and
sure. I think like bottling that would be better. I think our landlords aren't going to let us have another event.
I saw the skateboarding event. That didn't go over very well.
It was great, man. People loved it. but yeah, and they were like, you said you were going to have an open house. I'm like, well, yeah, that was the wording I used for everybody. They're like, that was not an open house. I'm like, well, yeah. Technically, I don't know. I thought it was. So we're...
They actually had some skateboarding. Did I see the skateboarding up and down a car? Is that what they were doing?
Yeah, they were jumping a car. They were jumping a car. And they were like, hey, can we bust out the windows? I'm like, man, that's not my car. And I'm not cleaning that up after sitting around here pouring beer all day, you know. Yeah, we didn't let them bust out the windows, but it was really impressive, you know. And then we had a band with horns and stuff playing. The Kings of Rhythm were there. They did a really good job, you know. But it was loud, and there was a lot of people and skateboarders, and it was kind of, you know. But everybody was very well contained.
Freaking kids are just having a party. That's all they're doing.
It was weird.
Just having a kegger in the parking lot.
Yeah, but we could only serve 12 ounces of beer a person at our get together.
Right. Like the Philly Beer Week events when we brought homebrew, and they said if anybody, even if they don't have a ticket, you have to give them homebrew. I'm like, well, why did I tell my friends to buy tickets for this event? Just tell them to come on down and vote for my ass. Why am I? So yeah, we'll definitely make some time to come on down and see what's going on. Time's a little tight lately with we still work day jobs.
And yeah, don't give up your day job. That's I guess if I had any piece of advice, it was don't give up your day job. Make your starting up the company. And yeah, I was so eager to get rid of mine, and now I'm like, why? Because you know, you think you're going in a certain direction, and it always takes longer to get established and to make all of your bills get paid.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, we pretty much would have to be selling 50 barrels a month, I think, for both of us to just outright quit our jobs.
And that's what we figured. That's why we ended up with a 10-barrel system, was because that was doable.
Right.
You know, still on what we consider part-time basis, not knowing what we know now.
Well, yeah, it's an 80-hour a week. A brewery is an 80-hour a week job, and then you got your regular job. So you know, I've made no illusions. I told my wife, I hope you understand that when we open the brewery, that you're going to be able to live with me having a mistress, because I'm going to spend a lot more time with her, and I'm going to love her a lot more than I love you. So you have to deal with that until you know, I could be home on a semi-regular basis. She always laughs at me. He's like, ha ha ha. I'm like, you just don't know, hon. You don't understand.
Oh, no, no. Give her my wife's number.
Support group. That's right. There'll be a Philadelphia startup widows club. All the women get together with someone to watch their kids, and they can...
There you go. Make a TV show in Lifetime. The Brewer's Wives.
Hey, hang out and drink our beer.
Yeah,
that's what they have of us, is our beer.
Is there anything else you want to tell about your brewery? Anything else? Any information? Anything you want to get out there? Websites, contact information. You're going to be doing any? You're going to do any festivals or anything like that?
Right now, we're not really. No.
Okay.
We're going to be doing some festivals. We're trying to keep more local on the festival scene, and we didn't get everything together in time for Philly Beer Week, because we weren't sure when our license stuff were coming through and blah blah blah. But when we start doing more local stuff, I'm all about just keep being, as our goal is not to sell outside Pennsylvania. We entered actually the U.S. Open beer thing.
Okay.
Why? Just because. But there's not a lot of stuff going on in Pennsylvania as far as like that sort of judging thing on a national level. But I really think that we need to start doing more local events. We do a lot of sponsoring of stuff. You know, I'd say more than half of the people that call us up saying, hey, can you donate some beer to this? We donate to it. Just because it doesn't cost much to donate beer. And, at least you're supporting something and you're out there doing something which can be, you know, positive in a lot of ways. So I rarely support. I like the idea of being able to support people by giving them beer.
And then we're actually hoping to be at Philly Craft Beer Fest next year. Which was in March, right? Yeah, it's in March down at the Naval Yard. So that was a pretty good event. Pretty good amount of drunken people that came through, but definitely a lot of good local brewers were there. There was a lot of, not local, but I mean, like Trogues and Dogfish Head and, you know, I mean, so these, you know, in the region, the region. That was something I would do again, just hopefully not as a home brewer. Underneath the Keystone Homebrew sign. It was a good experience. I'm glad Jason asked us to do that.
I think one of the coolest things so far. Well, there's been a really lot of really wonderful things that have happened, but one of the coolest things is going someplace that they don't know who you are, and it doesn't matter, and you order one of your beers, and you just sit back and have a beer. And that's really cool to be able to go into a bar and order your own beer. It doesn't have to be, you know, I'm not from like a, you know, egotistical standpoint or whatever, but just how cool is that? You know, it's like, there's something that's just like, wow. And that's an amazing, that's a really cool feeling.
I look forward to it. I don't know when that day will come, but we're hoping so.
Yeah, no, take your time and enjoy it. I mean, it's not a short process. None of it is.
Yeah.
But there's so many things to learn and so many cool things to learn. I know you guys already know probably a lot more than I do about brewing different styles that I haven't brewed yet or whatnot. But none of that really matters. As long as you can make a beer that you like.
Well, that's actually where we have a catch-up episode to bridge our first two episodes with this one, and some of the things we talked about were, you know, we did do some clones, and, you know, we're brewing a couple things of style to help out a homebrew club. It does annoy me sometimes. And annoys Rich. I'm a little more competitive, so I can take the judge's feedback when I, you know, I get something brewed style, but there's times when, like, I like the beer, all right? I know it's not, you know, thus and such, you know, but you don't have to belittle it, okay? It's not a badly made beer. It's just not what you're looking for, you know? So I've learned
rarely does somebody pick up a beer and just say, like, oh, this is pretty good. That's always preceded with a, oh, there's a strange aroma on this. It's like, this is a little too bitter for that, and I'm picking up something. Is this bacteria in this or something? You know, it's like...
Yeah.
No, but it's good. Trust me.
I think especially judges. they feel like they need to say something, whether they have to or not.
I have taken the test. I'm still waiting for my score. I took the test in 2007. So, no, I'm kidding. I took it in February. I've a couple times I've been arguing with the real hardline judges who are, you know, they want to give the beer a 19. Like, what are you trying to tell the brewer? Like, this, they obviously, there's an error. They used the wrong crystal malt, or they did something, but it's clean. It's just not the style. What do you want to do? Tell them you suck. Don't ever brew again. Or do you want to say, nice job. Try the recipe again. Make a couple minor tweaks. You're onto something. Like, what do you want to tell the person? Giving someone a 19 versus giving someone a 27 doesn't make a difference to you. They're not getting an award.
Still not gonna win.
Still not gonna win. Give them, you know, give them some either encouragement, or if they're really screwing something up, tell them, hey, look, watch your sanitation. I mean, I've gotten feedback of, hey, both your bottles were infected. Well, yeah, I brewed it in October. It's been sitting in the back of the fridge for 7 months. It's entirely possible that something at 40 degrees could eventually get infected, or maybe those were bad bottles to begin with. I don't know, but you know what? That same beer won the first place 3 months ago, so I don't care, you know, but that's the kind of stuff that you have to kind of take a grain of salt with judging, and even, like, you know, I do want to eventually be able to judge the JBF.
I would want to fly Colorado.
Burn jet fuel. I don't know.
There you go.
I think anytime you can do those sorts of, you know, just get different perspectives and understand
what people great. Are doing.
But
I think that would be awesome.
Yeah, but it's just one of those things where, you know, I like the judging. It really hones my palate, but at the same time, I know when I'm not tasting beer very well. So I gave someone a beer and, like, well, there's this and this. I'm like, yeah, I was just enjoying drinking it. That's all. I really wasn't judging it. They're like, so what'd you think of someone's beer? I'm like, It was going down. It was like it was working.
I didn't spit it out.
And that's the other thing. I always counsel people whenever they try a new beer, they try, you know, they, especially homebrewers. Oh, so-and-so makes bad beer. I'm like, but they're making beer. They're getting paid for it. You're not. Yes. You're paying to make beer, so you can't trash a pro brewer. They're still making, like, the big, and it's Middle Ages is one of the big ones that a lot of people make fun of that I know of, but you know, it's beer. They get paid. They get paid to make beer. They're in lots of stores, and people are obviously buying it. So you know, beer. Yeah,
it's just, that's the goal.
We hope. So Jason, it was wonderful to have you come on out.
Thank you very much for having it.
No problem.
Butterbugs, buddy, it's outside.
No, can you do it again?
He's allowed to take it on if he wants to.
That's my son playing with the toy out in the garage.
2-1-7-1.
And there's a full rack of country ribs.
It'll play Barley and
Mr. Cheese.
3 gallons, plus or minus.
Who's the chemical engineer here?